Radio Santa Cruz, as you heard before and hopefully have been listening to. We're at 96.3 or www.freakradio.org or our fairly new frequency, 101.1 FM, challenging Christian Crapola out on the east side. So glad if you're tuning in and check it out. This is not a general disparagement of Christianity, by the way. It's a disparagement of the massive radio interference that's been blasting in on us for the last, I don't know what, 4 or 5 months. The phone number here in the studio, if you want to reach us, me, that is, I'm alone at the moment, but who knows who may join me, is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. If you want to contact Free Radio Santa Cruz voicemail, 427-4523, 427-4523. That's if you want to leave a message off air for the radio collective, maybe give a contribution, maybe give a public service announcement, maybe seek a showtime of your own. All these are possibilities. Maybe donate something, either equipment, which we may need, particularly if the FCC comes down and does a repeat performance of what it did in San Francisco, seizing the equipment of San Francisco Liberation Radio on October 15th. And we are trying to stay alert here for that, a very unfortunate, dangerous, looming possibility. We're going to need to set up a whole new station somewhere else if that happens, and who knows, maybe they'll get that one too, and we'll be going from place to place, trying to put out some true news and views on the airways as we do. 427-3772, however, is the number to call if you want to be on this show, and you're welcome to call in. I'm keeping my eye on the flashing light here, which flashes when callers call in. We have only one line, so you might not get in immediately, but if you'll catch a busy signal, if that's the case, you can always email, too. I'm kind of keeping an eye on the email situation, and the email to address to use if you want to get in by email is rnorse, R-N-O-R-S-E, rnorse2, number 2, at hotmail.com, rnorse2 at hotmail.com. And I got a message here from Anita, who is my occasional co-host and an expert in the field of medical marijuana, that she hopes to be coming in by 7 p.m. or maybe call in, so we may have an actual break in my endless droning here. You can break it too by calling in and adding your commentary, your thoughts, your updates to what I'm saying, or criticizing, challenging, adding to, cautioning, whatever you want to do that assists in the purpose here. And the purpose is to consider the situation for houseless and low-income folks, particularly in terms of civil rights in Santa Cruz. That's been my subject for the last decade, still is. Working on that one tomorrow at 10 o'clock in the morning. For all you legal eagles, I'm going to be going into court and engaging in, the attorney who's volunteered to help, Tony Bowl, is going to be doing a Murguia motion for two citations that were given to me. It's kind of a rather trivial citations, but they are an example of the kind of harassment that activists face. Both of them jaywalking tickets. One of them was a ticket given to me on February 15th on Mission Street as I was walking back from the massive, 3,000 to 7,000 person peace rally. Remember the days when we actually had people on the streets urging an end to the war in Iraq, all those glorious days? Well, this was the height of that protest, and I was given a ticket for jaywalking across Mission Street. And I am challenging in court the idea that this wasn't, that I'm actually suggesting this was a form of selective enforcement, that I was picked out perhaps because of who I was, perhaps because of the T-shirt I was wearing, which had a warning on it that said, I think it was, danger, police, and area, is what my T-shirt said. And that'll be coming up tomorrow in court tomorrow for a hearing where the judge will decide if there is sufficient information to grant a Murguia motion to requiring discovery of the other side so we can probe more deeply into the issue. It's actually a complete waste of time, and we offered the city attorney, why not just drop this ticket? We won't go any further. Why waste the city's money when they're slicing off seniors at De Anza? They're dumping social services. We don't want to cost you anymore, but you're not going to get away with intimidating activists, so just let's stop it here. They wouldn't do that. City Attorney John Barisoni felt this was a worthy cause, along with his $600,000 lawsuit against the Blue Lagoon. You may remember that one, or maybe you haven't heard much about that one. Blue Lagoon is suing the city and various police officers for endless harassment there, ranging from bringing a police dog into the bar to shining lights regularly or irregularly into the Blue Lagoon. And they offered to settle, I think, for $100,000. Now the city has chosen to spend $600,000. That's information I get from one of the attorneys involved in the case. So my case is pretty small potatoes, but I don't like being stopped without good reason, and I think it's healthy for the police department to get the word that this is not something that they can do to me or to other people who choose to do what I do and challenge it. The second jaywalking ticket is another, even more outrageous ticket. It was on Pacific Avenue, and I got it when I crossed near the Host Center, crossing Pacific Avenue. This one was not for... Technically, it was for supposedly interfering with a vehicle, though there were no vehicles around for me to interfere with at that particular point, and all the witnesses I talked to, and my own eyes told me there were no vehicles, but this was done in the midst of a move-along table protest where the police were harassing and ticketing people like Matthew Hartog and Steve Argue for keeping a table for more than an hour in one spot downtown. Argue still is being forced to go to court for that on November 14th. That's, I guess, the date of the next pretrial. Maybe something involving him tomorrow, too. I'm not sure, but I do know that I've got a hearing tomorrow. Two Merguia motions. If anybody's interested, check it out. It's Department 2, 10 a.m. I'm not suggesting people come necessarily to show solidarity or support. That's not necessary. But if you're interested in the process and you want to see what goes on when you try to get the police accountable for selective enforcement, this might be an interesting legal lesson for you, or it might be a complete waste of time. It's hard for me to tell. We'll see. I'm going to try it anyway. So that's happening tomorrow at 10. Also, a quick heads up, Rotkin, council member Mike Rotkin, shadow mayor of Santa Cruz, as I call him, the guy who kind of really calls a lot of the shots on the city council that Mayor Riley defers to, will be on this show on Sunday. The show, of course, and on Sunday, it's a different time, 9:30 in the morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. He's going to be on from 10 to 11 in the morning. Originally, he was going to be speaking about the De Anza sellout, which has really gone down big time, really gloomy news on that, and I'll be getting to that shortly. But since that one's largely over, I think we're going to turn back to the whole issue of why is Councilmember Rotkin and his city council making it illegal to be homeless in Santa Cruz in terms of criminalization of sleep, criminalization of sitting down, criminalization of asking for a dime after dark, criminalizing people who live in their vehicles by massive parking regulations due to go into effect on January 1st. Just a general hostility and meanness toward poor and homeless people, which has been increasing. And on the other side of that debate, we hope to have some other folks in the studio too, but on the phone is going to be Michael Stoops of the National Coalition for the Homeless. I've had my differences with Michael before. I think I've pilloried him at different times as a conservative bureaucrat, and I've had my differences, but he has come out with an excellent report which involves summarizing the statistics from, I guess it's 143 U.S. cities, showing in the last year and a half massive increases in anti-homeless legislation, and that includes Santa Cruz. And he's going to be our expert, graciously calling in from, I guess, Indiana, where he'll be at his folks' home, and taking his own time to call and to talk to Rotkin. You've heard him before. He called in when Rotkin and Kennedy were on Old Lady Scar Arms show a month or two ago on a Sunday when Rotkin and Kennedy debated Joe Williams on the downtown ordinance of street performers stuff. And one of the callers was Stoops, and Kennedy and Rotkin lampooned him and laughed at him when he suggested Santa Cruz was the 13th meanest city and so forth in the country. And hopefully you'll be able to hear a more solid discussion, though it's always hard to stay on firm ground with Motormouth Mike Rotkin, as I call him. Partially in admiration, partially in derogation when I use that term. He is faster than a speeding tape recorder on fast speed. The man can throw out 6 or 7 ideas in the course of 30 seconds in response to something you've said, half of which are true, half of which aren't, half of which are half true. I guess it makes 3 halves. Anyway, That's on Sunday, 10 to 11 o'clock on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, coming up in 3 days. So stay tuned for that, or tune in again for that. Tonight, SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network, the organization that elected many of the self-proclaimed progressive politicians in the last 2 decades, is holding its annual assembly general meeting at the Loudon Nelson Center. It's open to the public. You can't vote unless you're a SCAN member. I think you can't vote even if you become a SCAN member. You have to be one 30 days before or some such thing. But they, I believe, voted in their steering committee, again, if my information is correct, to support the De Anza rent control. Now, whether they're supporting the rent control without the referendum, I thought it was the referendum, and I was, last night I was criticized in an internet story that responded to a flyer, which I wrote, and which I'm probably going to read tonight, which was directed to De Anza seniors, who had a final showdown on the issue of referendum signatures, and we'll talk about that, as I said. My information from the Green Party activist Thomas Levitt was that the Green Party did, in fact, vote to support the De Anza folks in their gathering of referendum signatures and in order to retain or restore rent control, real rent control, not the bogus, Rotkin-esque, grotesque, parody of rent control that the City Council passed in September, which guts the rent control law for mobile homes and essentially says, yeah, you have rent control only as long as you keep title to the home. If you die, and many of these folks are over 75, the average age is 75 out of De Anza, then it rents can escalate to, quote, market rate or whatever MHC thinks is market rate. That's the multi-huge corporation that's doing all this lawsuit activity that's freaked the City Council into abandoning the seniors. And that would raise rents 3 to 7 times, according to leases already presented by MHC to the De Anza seniors. So it's not real rent control that that Rotkin and Kennedy are proposing. They, of course, are saying, oh, no, it is. We're just, you know, this is going to be some loss of equity, which is an illegal-sounding term, which means you lose your life savings and everything you had in your homes, and good luck. So I guess I'll be getting into De Anza pretty soon. SCAN has already voted, as I understand it, to put on its agenda a resolution about De Anza, but again, that's probably going to be moot because De Anza has caved. That's the latest word from activists and residents of De Anza, as well as, of course, the headlines in today's Santa Cruz Sentinel. You know, maybe the best thing to do is to go to that pretty quickly, and I will. Actually, let me just say this, though, before I do. The couple things are also happening tonight. If you don't go to the SCAN meeting, you can also consider turning to Club Cruise. That's going to be playing at 7 o'clock on channel, I think it's 27, or it could be 26. I'm never sure which, since I never watch it. Don't have that cable facility. That's a show hosted by activist Becky Johnson, often concerned with civil rights stuff and local civil rights stuff, which I think is important. Nick Whitehead also is occasional host of that show. Tune in tonight to find out what's happening. Maybe she can give us an update. Also, the interview program, often having to do with local public issues, though often taking the most bland, boring, and toothless spokespeople. Show once called Voices from the Village, now called Voices, runs from 7:30 to 8:30 on community TV. You can check that out, too, if you happen to have channel 26, 27, those type things. Also, there was an ad hoc meeting of Santa Cruz City Council's Budget Revenue Ballot Measure Committee. This is one of the two committees that the Budget Committee split into in July, and then the City Council closed all the hearings to these committees. One of them was called the Facilities Committee, involving Matthews and two other council members. This one is the Revenue Committee, which was headed by Kennedy, or involved him, and two other council members. I'm going to also try to play tonight Kennedy and Rotkin denouncing me for suggesting that they're holding secret closed meetings. They are, and they were, and they continue to. though they did hold one open meeting of the Revenue Committee, and that was on Tuesday night. I didn't get to it, and it wasn't televised, but it was taped, and it will be replayed 8 o'clock on Sunday evening for those who want, again, on community TV, Ag Channel 2627. So I hopefully will learn more at that time. I didn't see it either live, and, of course, haven't seen a tape of it either. The Facilities Committee met apparently in early September, but they are not... I don't think anybody took a tape of that one, so we don't know what the hell happened with that thing. Again, the City Council comes up with prefabricated stuff and then just gives everybody 2 minutes to agree or disagree, and then they proceed what they were going to do anyway. Here's a call. Hi, caller, you're on free radio. Hello? Uh-huh. A little calypso there. Okey-doke. Got anything to say before we move on, Mr. Rhythm Person? All right. So, yeah, if you want to call in, 427-3772 is the number to call. Sound effects are good, but you might also clarify what it is on your mind, such as it is. So we can talk about it. I think what I'm going to do before I get into the De Anza thing, and that will be shortly, is play a little bit from the last city council meeting. By the way, the next council meeting is on Tuesday, for those who like to go to such things. It is at... 3 and 7, I believe. I haven't seen the agenda. The agenda comes out usually around 5 o'clock on Thursdays, and that kind of puts it slightly out of my reach because I'm rushing to get to the studio or hustling to kind of put the show together. You can also catch the City Council agenda on the Internet by going to the city website, often not posted till the next day. I'm going to check to see if it's posted tonight, but I doubt if it is yet. And they also have materials in the library. They had some policy that you had to give an ID to get the materials. I told them that was inappropriate. These are public materials. Please let me know if you are refused access to public materials in the library around City Council agendas and City Council packet materials, because I'd like to hear about that. And the number to call there is the HUF line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Again, the civil rights group I work with, 423-HUF. And I'd like to, you know, be advised, maybe we can all go in and clarify what the policy should be again to the library, which in many ways I want to commend the library. They've kind of taken the lead in a number of things. They did delay a year, but then they announced they weren't going to cooperate with the Patriot Act stuff, even though the Santa Cruz City Council's Scott Kennedy prefers to gut strong Patriot Act, anti-Patriot Act legislation, and refused to introduce new legislation. The Bill of Rights Defense Committee, for example, is trying to put on the agenda. The library took the lead there. And so my hat's off to them on that issue. Let's listen to a little bit, though, of the last City Council meeting. And the issues that I noted there were, well, when I came in, I was trying to speak at Oral Communications in response to a mass of attacks by City Council members in the afternoon, which I'm going to try to cue up, too. But I was the last speaker, and Emily Riley would not let me speak. I guess some would say, well, you know, time was up, 30 minutes have been passed, so what would give you the right to speak? And the answer was, the last speaker who came up only took 15 or 20 seconds, and I could have been fitted in, and I wasn't. So I cry foul, 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 foul. But that's nothing new. Here's a little from the interviews outside the City Council or after the last City Council meeting.
It's City Council time on Tuesday night. It's about 8:10. We're out in the corridors of the City Council. I'm actually talking to the woman who had the last say on the issue of the crossing guard. You actually came here to speak about your concern about keeping the crossing guards, which have been cut from the city budget.
And a budget that is put in active at the beginning of every year. The city, any city department has to have their budget in. So why are they getting rid of people when the money's been already allocated for their jobs? Why are they losing their jobs now? Where'd the money go?
What's your name?
Lynn Edmondson.
Lynn, where do you live?
Santa Cruz. I'm a fourth generation Santa Cruzan.
And you have kids that...
I have a grandson right there, fifth generation.
What impact would the loss of crossing guards have on your grandchildren?
Well, first of all, I work. I cannot be there when he leaves school in the afternoon, you know, he lives with me, to get him home. I can't worry about that main issue right there, Mission Bay area. It's very, very heavy traffic. And so I think it's a big impact, and I think it's another big impact on our community of more people out of work. It's going to be crossing guards homeless next, you know? I mean, who, maybe I'll be homeless next. I'm getting so tired of no jobs in our community.
You're here. Now, you also picked up this flyer that I've been kind of passing around, Boycott Riley's Good Things to Eat, Don't Buy at the Bigotry Bakery. Pretty strong statement against Mayor Riley. Any reaction to that?
Well, my reaction is, first of all, I mean, I think that the street performers are wonderful downtown. I think that's great. I think it's disgusting that people have nowhere to live when we have so much property in this community, property that's being saved for a snake or a snail or a toad with red legs, but not for the poor people to live on.
Or for MHC, the large corporation that's making a lot of money.
Right. Or Post. How about Post? I mean, my gosh, they're really buying up everything on the coast. But the thing is, there's property that could be set up just like in a mobile home type area where maybe the people can volunteer work to help clean the areas clean or clean for everybody else if they can't afford to pay. I mean, there's got to be hope for somebody.
We've been talking with...
Do I have to say my name again?
You don't have to.
Lynn Edmondson.
Thanks, Lynn. So you have an idea about how to deal with the homeless situation?
I'm not saying my name.
Okay, but you... Oh, we already know your name. You're under arrest. You think UCSC should have something to do with it?
I believe that UCSC has totally come into our town and just like a big virus taken over all the housing. And every year, they'll up more students, so then they get... you know, more housing and more people are out in the streets. And I think it should be their responsibility to allocate housing for the homeless. I think it's their fault that our town is too small for everybody now. It's one big student town. That's all it is.
And you're not alone in thinking that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're talking with environmental activist P. Matichek. Patricia, you just had a three-minute summarization. I should say your testimony was not all you wanted it to be. You had, what, three legal points and six financial points, or was it six financial points and three legal points?
Well, I summed up all the multiple legal points into three and then made six financial points.
We're talking, of course, about the Broadway Bromer Police R Us crossing between the two areas, which is apparently slated for either... Is it slated for approval tonight?
Well, what's before the council tonight is to give direction to staff to begin the master plan. And so there are four proposed elements for the council to consider. Interpretive signs, no designated on-site parking, restoration of sensitive areas, but the kicker is this Broadway Bromer bike road.
Who's pushing this?
Public Works.
And that's some bike groups. I notice we have a People Powers here.
Yeah.
Now, I understand there's kind of a split in the biking community over this issue.
Thank you. Yes, indeed. There are bicyclists and there are bicycling environmentalists. And the fact that in order to cross this natural area, two enormous bridges would have to be constructed and a great deal of pavement laid and grading done makes it very inconsistent to bicycle through this area on the route proposed, given that it would have to be developed in order to use bicycles on it in this way. One can easily travel east-west through the property now on a bicycle, so this proposal is all about an east-west connection, which, because of the terrain and the big gulches involved, would require these bridges. But since alternate routes exist, at the present time, there have been significant improvements made on Soquel, with more to come. Murray, Seabright and Murray have some, that bridge is due to be modified. It was supposed to be done last year. Why Public Works is dragging their feet, I really don't know. And of course, the city is...
called the Public Church section.
And the city is, and Regional Transportation is making some snail's progress on acquiring the rail right-of-way, which is the true key to east-west bicycling in Santa Cruz County.
Now, what about this $800,000 cost? You mentioned that.
And we are going to be interrupting this tape of the Bromer Broadway bike path issue, which actually has some homeless significance. Hi, actually take a caller here from De'Anza Mobile Home Estates, or should I say MHC Mobile Home Estates. hi there, caller. You want to sign in?
Sure. I'm Patricia Ryle from Santa Cruz De'Anza Senior Mobile Home Park.
Welcome, Patricia. And
thank you.
I know that people probably have read the paper, the headlines, the Sentinel, which, well, why don't I let you tell us all the bad news?
Well, the majority of the residents here at the mobile home park have voted not to use the referendum to stop the city from issuing the new ordinance, which will eliminate the irrevocable rent control ordinance, under which 200 of us residents were safely protected from MHC Corporation, the owners of the land that we live on. And what happens now, well, is we are kind of on our own with MHC, a corporation that owns and has disemboweled 155 senior mobile home parks across the United States.
155?
Yes.
Wow.
Making billions of dollars from seniors who were relying on the equity in their homes to carry them through troubled times in the last of their lives.
Well, my understanding, listening to Will Constantine, an attorney speaking at the Golden State Mobile Home Association on Saturday, was that the rent control law framed by John Barisone, the city attorney, who's city attorney for two, count them, two cities, Santa Cruz and Capitola, and I guess his wife shares that in that particular responsibility, or as
right.
part of that staff.
Mm-hmm.
He put together a law, a cumbersome law, which essentially required the city to put caps on sales of the property, and also stated one of the purposes of the law for rent control was that there be affordable housing. And in
sure.
so doing, made himself vulnerable, not fatally so, but enough to tie up the city. And I guess so far, was it 11 lawsuits that MHC filed against the city? Do you know the number?
It is 11. Yes.
And according to Constantine, and tell me, correct me if I'm wrong, he said that 10 of those lawsuits have been dismissed. Is that accurate?
I don't know that.
Because I could be wrong, but that was what I got from my notes listening to him. I could be wrong. If anybody knows differently, please call in and let me know. But he says that, in essence, MHC has a bad lawsuit, that the city has been defending it, and that others have been going to court and spent like $300,000 in the last 3 or 4 years doing it. But then suddenly the city announced it was going to cost $70,000 to $100,000 a month,
mm-hmm.
and started using MHC's own estimates of, what, $12 to $16 million in damages, something to that effect.
Sure.
Which was really kind of hard to imagine where they got those figures from, because Constantine said the only damages that they could possibly be awarded, as far as he could see, unless you got a judge that was who knows what, you know, paid off or, you know, blinded by corporate who knows what, $100,000 to $1 million was what he estimated might be the damages on the outside. And the city attorney proposed that he be spending fees of $1 million, but Constantine said, no, $250,000 tops is really what the story is. So you're getting these hugely inflated scare stories from the city that the city then used to pass 6-1 this law gutting rent control in September. Am I accurate so far?
Yes.
Now, then you guys and gals all got together and said, time to take this matter to the voters. And
absolutely.
You put out signatures and got, gosh, it takes 3,300 plus signatures to get on the ballot, and it means you need actually 6,000 or 7,000. You got what? How many signatures?
8,500.
8,500 signatures. Mm-hmm. So you were ready to go in and put that on the ballot.
Absolutely.
And then folks inside your own park started circulating fear stories, or am I wrong about that?
I don't know how it started. I know that something changed drastically without many of us team leaders who were out there collecting signatures for the referendum knowing about it. And suddenly the whole course of the direction we were going changed.
When did that happen?
I have no idea. I just walked into the meeting Tuesday night and was blindsided by the fact that everything had changed.
Now, in fact, had anything really changed in terms of the arguments as to doing this? I mean, did some amazing new information come up that the head of your association, Sterling Frost, or Herb Rossman, or others on the 8-person board were able to say, look, these are new facts that should lead us to change our original strategy? Were there any new facts presented?
Well, yes, there were.
Okay, what were those?
It wasn't really clear to me. I mean, it wasn't something that I could literally get my hands around, but I think that there was a negotiation with MHC, which benefited the park, which we weren't getting much out of the city, and so I think our...
What was that negotiation, Pat?
I think it was that a few pieces that when we sold our homes, you know, it was that certain areas of the park were going to go to from 500 to 1250, and out on the ocean we're going to go from 750 to 5,000. Well, it was renegotiated that across the board, across the park, it would only go up 200%.
Only if it was sold in the next year, am I correct?
1 year, that's correct.
So in other words, they gave you a year to vacate the park, but then they can do their condo building or whatever else they want to do.
That's absolutely correct.
So in other words, the only addition you got was a 1 year to get out on your equity.
There were a couple other little things.
Like?
The sole discretion of, and I didn't see that in writing, nor did I have clarity on that. So I don't know if that is truly a written change. I'm hoping that it is.
Clarify this for us.
As far as rent controls going up when you sell your home at the sole discretion of, you know, I think this 200% across the board was supposed to change that.
Meaning, again, I'm not understanding what changes.
Well,
I mean, the previous thing, as I understand it, was that once your home was sold afterward, rents escalate to whatever MHC feels is market value, which could be 3 to 7 times what they are now. In fact,
that's right.
And this isn't just some sort of wild exaggeration, such as the city council was doing or MHC was doing. I'm actually referring to actual leases that have already been presented.
Mm-hmm.
Is that accurate?
There is a difference in, like, we don't have an ocean view, so we're in out toward Delaware. And so our home, we pay $500 a month for the land lease.
Right.
Ours, if we sold it, would go to $1,250. And with the changes that were made prior to this meeting on Tuesday night, ours will, instead of going to $1,250, will go to $1,000.
But only for the next year.
But only for the next year.
So
and then the people out on the ocean, though, it will go from $750 to $1,500. Rather than to 5,000.
So it really benefits the wealthier residents of De Anza?
Yes, absolutely. So this,
and the wealthier residents are those who happen to be in positions of power on the board of directors?
Well, you're putting me in a very bad position here, but some of them, not all of them.
Okay, I don't want to misstate the situation.
There are a few that live on the ocean that are on the board, maybe more than two.
Maybe more than two.
Out of seven.
Now, what I understand, I thought there were eight people on the board.
Pardon?
I thought there were eight people on the board.
Yes, you're right.
And what I understand was, I wrote a story on the Indy Media on this subject for those who want to check it out. If you go to www.santacruz.indymedia, I-N-D-Y.
Yes, I put my article on there tonight as well.
Oh, excellent, excellent. This, I called my story Steered, Sold Out, and Stampeded, De Anza Surrenders. And I called it a report on the collapse of the De Anza referendum drive at the very moment when the seniors had all the signatures they needed.
Right.
And as I understand it also, the doors to this meeting on Tuesday night where they had this vote were in essence locked so that people outside the park, supporters of the referendum, could not come in. And opponents, too, for that matter. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's correct.
So Christopher Crone, who wanted to speak, was not allowed to come in.
That's correct.
And attorneys such as Will Constantine, who could
that's
have clarified
correct.
And answered questions, was not allowed in.
No one but a homeowner in the park could be there.
And additionally, there was no absentee ballot provision, so although less than half the people, well, actually, I guess there was a total of 140 homeowners were in the room out of about 200 homeowners.
Yes, I think there were about 140 people there out of 200.
There were still 60 people who were denied 60 homes or coaches that were denied absentee ballots.
Well, the homeowners association rules state that if, you know, in a case like this, that you have to be present to vote. You cannot have an absentee vote.
And additionally, I understand that the board of directors allowed themselves as much time as they wanted to speak. on the issue?
Yes.
And that each of them spoke against the referendum?
Yes, that's right.
And that from the floor of the rest of the people got only 3 minutes each in a rather disgusting parody of the city council approach?
Right.
So forgive me for putting it that way.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, to me, this sounds like what you were fighting against.
Yeah, it did to me, too. I've been kind of in a state of shock trying to figure this out. Because the people of the park here, I do have to say this. I have to say that I feel the Homeowners Association Board of Directors and everyone in this park is doing the best they know how to do for the sake of all the people. I'm hoping that. And maybe I'm a person that just walks around saying out of rose-colored glasses, but...
Well, we all would like to think the best of each other.
We've all worked so hard to make this work, and I know the board members in particular have put in hellacious hours.
Right.
And I have difficulty thinking that they have done ill will to the majority, and yet I don't know because I've not been privy to those private meetings any more than the city and MHC meetings.
That's another thing I wanted to ask you about. You know, one of the criticisms of the city council was that they were holding private meetings with MHC and essentially did this settlement behind everybody's back.
Right.
Without there being any consultation with
Clearview Court.
And incidentally, Clearview Court was not allowed into the room either, were they?
No, they weren't.
So they were, I imagine they must be feeling just great.
Oh, they're feeling very rejected because they were out there working so hard to get these signatures as well.
So, having done all this, I guess when I initially presented, let me go back to this, the same argument applies to the city council as I see now applies to the board of directors on so many levels. Like, here's an example. The city council began fighting these lawsuits and did so month after month, year after year.
Right.
And when they sat down to make the initial appraisal as to why they should fight the lawsuits, they estimated it would be a good idea to do, and indeed they were winning. And they won. They were winning one after another.
Yes.
What new information came to them in August of 2003 that led them to say, "Oh, we got to stop this"? You know, that was never made clear to me. And similarly, what new information came to the board of directors that made them say, "Oh, okay, well, we can sell out in a year. Let's just all sell out with the special preferences for the people on the coast"?
Robert, if you could answer that question for me, I'd be very happy.
Well, it seems to me, unless there is new information, and also there's a situation that the board of directors of De Anza, and correct me if I'm wrong, met privately, either by email or by phone or by letter, or I don't know what they did, but they did not inform the rest of the community they were meeting with these people, did they? MHC people and city council members, that happened? They met with these people in the days before this Tuesday night sellout meeting, as
I
call it?
That's what I understand.
So,
I understand that to have happened, but I don't know that factually.
Okay. Let me ask you this. I have in front of me a little flow chart, which I understand was given out at this Tuesday meeting.
Yeah.
This is a flow chart.
Pretty slanted, huh?
It's extremely slanted. It has a picture of what happens after signature is submitted.
Yeah.
It says the leases go away, city and MHC go to court or arbitration, the city repeals the new law, and we're back where we started, and we could lose our current rent and equity.
Mm-hmm.
There's a media campaign against the city, and the new law is either upheld or not. We're back where we started, the city could repeal all rent control if revenue initiative fails, we could lose the current rent and equity.
Pretty sad, huh?
So there, instead of suggesting that you could win, that the MHC might back down and start really negotiating, that the city would say, we're not going to repeal rent control when there are 8,500 signatures, at least 4,000 of them are valid signatures for keeping us on the ballot. That is not even presented as a possibility in this literature, which I understand, wasn't this official literature from the chair?
It was.
This to me is a distortion and an attempt to steer this group in a particular direction. Now, I don't say that it's done necessarily with ill will. I think what they're doing is they think this is the best deal, and they are pushing you to take it. But, of course, they're not giving you the information. They're stampeding you into it.
Right.
And the other question I have is, these signatures are not the property of the board of directors. They're the property of the people who went out and got them, and they're the property, and they really, they're the property.
That's what we don't know yet.
And I know that today is the last
day. It's too late.
Well, today is the last day to file the signatures, right?
It's too late.
Well, don't you have till midnight?
I don't think so.
Time to break into the board of directors and grab those signatures and march down to the registrar and get them turned in. That's what
they
I say.
They are locked up, Robert. They are locked up.
Well, you should demand they be released or get a lawsuit to release them and get an injunction to hold off this process, because it seems to me that this wastes the energy of all those people.
Well, we have a vote of the residents of this park, and you have to respect that.
I understand.
And we didn't vote once. We voted twice.
Now,
we came back together today.
Tell about that second vote. That was a meeting today, right?
It was much closer than the first one.
And what was the vote the second time?
It was 46-56 today, and it was 42-90 Tuesday night.
46-56 today.
Yeah, about. I think it was 40-something to 50-something today.
Now, was this a vote that was...
not written.
Was it called? Did the board of directors call this meeting, or did, was this, how did this meeting, the second
meeting? The board called this meeting.
And why did they call a second meeting?
Because MHC Corporation was...
announcing that they had actually agreed to this proposal that had previously just been floated?
No, they were trying to reword the agreement from Tuesday evening, which stated that present owners could sell with the 34-year lease agreement, and only their new buyers would only be charged 200% of the homeowner's present rent.
For the first year? For the next year?
No. You could only have the agreement to sell your home at a 200% increase for the next year.
Right.
If you didn't sell it in a year, then it reverted back to the old policy.
The old policy being the one that the city council rammed down.
So if you sell your home then after a year, then it goes to $5,000 on the ocean and $1,250 here where I live.
Right.
But you have a year window to sell your home.
So what was brought in by the board today in the second vote was what, a concretization of this proposal or a change in this proposal?
Well, at the Tuesday night meeting, the president of the board had a fax from MHC Corporation stating that they would agree to this 200% only, which really served the people on the ocean, because $750 to 200% is $1,500 rather than $750 to $5,000. Mm-hmm. But where I live, it was going to be $500 where I live to $1,250, and if this went into effect, the 200% was $500 to $1,000, but
right,
only saved me $250 a month, which, mine is a brand new home, mm-hmm, and I had it sold, it wouldn't have made a difference to me, equity-wise, because my home is, you know, only a couple of years old.
This was the only new information you got that made the...
That's the only information we got.
And are you talking about respecting the... Well, let me, before I go back to... I'm concerned that this, again, as I said, I regard this as a manipulated vote that was done through fear tactics. I understand if 8 members of the board stand up and tell you, you're going to lose everything unless you vote my way, yeah, you're going to...
No, they didn't present it that way.
Okay, how did they present it?
They got up and presented it that this was the information they knew and what their vote was going to be, and unanimously it was no, not to take the referendum to
right,
the city.
That's what, but isn't that not pretty much the same thing?
I mean,
I don't know. Maybe I wasn't there. You were, so you would know better.
Well, I was devastated.
Right. Well, I mean, it seems to me they're not saying, look, let's consider both sides of this. They just said, well, we got this deal. This is a better deal. This is the best deal. And they kept essentially saying the same
thing.
There
was no negotiation. They had made up their mind as a board that this is what they were going to vote.
And they gave themselves disproportionate time to talk about it. It just
mm-hmm
doesn't sound fair to me. And it doesn't. Now, what happened at this last meeting? Was there more debate or discussion today?
No. It was very fast and very clean, swift.
Who called the vote? Who cut off debate?
Well, Sterling, the president, came in and he called the meeting.
Right.
And he came in and he said there have been change there. When I got the agreement that I thought we had on Tuesday night, when I got it in writing, it was there were other clauses that caused it to be not correct.
And so
he was taking action. He said I told them that we wouldn't agree to this and we were going to go back, we still had the referendum to use as a hammer.
Right.
So he
came
back and used that again today, and at, I don't know, some late hour, we sat in there waiting for his decision, and he came in and said that they had finally agreed that they would take that clause out. That.
So what was the clause they took out?
Well, it had to do with the 200% when you sold it as an original owner, and I don't know all the facts and details because I'm sitting there as part of the audience.
So they didn't pass around any papers or anything?
No. Mm-mm.
So in other words, what Sterling Frost did was he got them to adhere to their original deal, the original deal that disproportionately benefits those who have the more expensive coaches. Is that an unfair thing to say?
No.
Okay.
It's true.
Well, then what we're talking about is, I'm afraid that I do not have your generous charity on this issue, and it sounds like a big sellout to me, however well intended. And I would go to an attorney and look to find some way to. You got the signature still. You might say, "Oh, it's all over." It isn't all over.
No, it isn't.
Till the court decides it's all over.
No, it isn't. And well, it's not all over for me because none of this so far has been in any way a community decision, not between the city and not in the park. And I'm sorry to say that because I thought this place was a safe place. It is safe, I mean, but it's when you pit people against
it's not safe if they're going to steal
future.
Your home. I'm sorry.
Pardon?
It's not safe if they're going to steal your home from you. That's not safe at all. That's the irony. They make you afraid, keep you in your homes because you're afraid of being robbed, and say, here's a safe place to be inside this park. But then suddenly your entire home disappears in front of you.
Well,
you
know. You're faced with a lot of different people from a lot of different places, and you're relying on a board of directors to guide you, and if you do that, you sort of give up your power, you know, to a different place. I've only been here a year and a half, and probably if I'd been here longer, I would.
Well, now if there ever was a time to reclaim your power, now is the time. I'll tell you. And
yeah, tell me how to do that, Robert.
Well, I don't have the legal experience, expertise, or nor have I done the research, but I would say, run, do not walk, to Constantine or some other local attorney. First of all, demand the signatures back. Demand those petitions. Say I want, you know, I mean, you may have decided, you know, there may have been two votes that I feel were not fair on this issue.
How can you get them back now? It's past the time.
I think it may be till
midnight. They could be on the beach right now burning them, having a beach party.
They could be. I don't know if that would be legal either. If that's the case, then you might try to get a court injunction saying there is testimony that these signatures were gathered. I mean, you know, I don't know. I can't tell you the sure way forward, but I know that you should form a group of people concerned about exploring these things lickety-split. That's all. I mean, you're not going to lose anything by looking into it, I don't think.
Oh, I don't think so either.
Right.
And I thank you for your help and being there at all these city council meetings and helping us out.
Well, I'm
I appreciate it very much.
I'm not risking my trailer. I'm just giving you my opinion. So be advised, you are making the choices, and that's what's important. So,
right.
You know, you've got to make those decisions. You've got to weigh what Sterling Frost says, you know, and but you have to weigh on the merits of the argument, not the fact that, you know, he gets eight minutes and everybody else gets three, and you know, and that he has all the meetings and contacts. You have to decide, and you have to decide no if that's what your decision is. I'm going to fight for my home, and that's what we have to do. Or
right.
You know, yes, this is the best deal.
Right.
And it's, I don't know if it's a majority vote in this situation. Obviously, it's not, because individual people can sue. That's true, but I think there's still a way to fight for this referendum. Let's put it this way. I don't know that there isn't still a way to fight for this referendum.
I would love to know.
I hope you have
a way, you call me.
I will ask other people to call in and talk about this, and I would say try to get a hold of an attorney this evening, a sympathetic attorney, to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hey.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I hope people understand what we've been talking about. It's the De Anza sellout, headlined in today's Santa Cruz Urinal. A vote by the De Anza seniors, two votes actually, one much narrow, to abandon the referendum, and what I consider are to be contrived circumstances. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert.
Hey there. It sounds like a Uncle Scott to me.
Yeah, I was just listening, and somehow I think this woman doesn't understand math.
Okay, well, go ahead.
If there's a 200% increase at some point in time, and her rent is currently 500, it doesn't go up to 1,000. 200% of 500 is another 1,000, so her rent would go up to 1,500.
Right. Actually, I heard this from another source. I think she misspoke herself and meant doubled. I don't think she meant goes up 200%. I think she meant goes up to 200% of what it was, not increases by, but I could be wrong.
Well, yeah.
I heard that it doubled when I talked to another member, that was what the deal was.
Well, doubling the rent and increasing it by 200% are two different things.
Thank you, Professor. I agree with that.
So, you know, and I don't know what happened out there. I mean, I assume that Scott Kennedy probably called everybody that lives out there and told them, oh, the city's going to be in dire straits if you continue this suit, and we're going to blame everything that happens in the future. If we have to close down Loud Nelson, if we have to close down the swimming pool at Harvey West, it's going to be all your fault. We're going to let everybody in the public know it's your fault.
You know, I suspect that that's something like that may have happened, but I think that more important, they were the implied threat was that the city would come back after the referendum went on the ballot, killing the settlement, because even without a vote, the settlement is time sensitive and dies on October 23rd if there isn't an agreement. Rent control resumes until such time as there's a vote of the voters or the city council itself rescinds the law. The point is that the likely scenario would be that city council would rescind the law because they wouldn't want an expensive election, have to wait for an expensive election on the issue, which they might win or they might lose, but it would already
the election's not going to cost anything. It's just one more line on the election that's going to happen.
Oh, you mean in March?
Yeah.
Right, okay. But I guess the question is, I mean, maybe they would let it fester for 8 months. But I think I guess the fear is that they would move in with a second law that essentially eliminated rent control entirely, after that election or after they could move in if it had been put on the ballot as a referendum, they could have moved 2 weeks down the line to say, okay, we concede, we are rescinding our removal of rent control, we're returning to the old situation, you don't have to have an election. And then 2 weeks after that, they could come back and say, now we've got a new law that will completely eliminate rent control and provide no leases. And that, I think, was the fear of the De Anza people, that city council would act vindictively.
Well, it would depend on what the original vote was when they enacted the original rent control legislation. If it was a 7-0 vote, then they would need 7 votes to overturn that. And if Porter would stick to his guns and vote against it, then they could not overturn it on a 6-1 vote.
Well, I think they could propose an additional law. In other words, you could be right, but my understanding is that, and it isn't, maybe you can clarify this for me, if they go back and they say, okay, we accept what this referendum is going to say, we don't want to take it to a ballot, so we just cancel the changes we made in September, they could then come back with a second law, somewhat different than the first, that eliminates rent control in a different way and provides no leases, and they could pass that. And I mean, and I guess that was the fear. Could they do that? That's been my suggestion. I think that.
Well,
you
shouldn't be giving the city council all these ideas, Robert.
Well, I think that's the story that was being spread around.
Uh-huh.
That I think is what they were afraid of. But what they didn't realize is if they can put one referendum on the ballot, they can sure as hell put a second one on the ballot, and I think the citizens are going to wake up and say, not only are we want a referendum, we want a recall this time.
Right. Well, I mean, myself, I think when they were circulating this petition, they should have also circulated one making a limit on how long a council member can serve. Right now, they can serve 2 consecutive terms, take 2 years off, and then serve 2 more terms. To me, that's ridiculous. They should be able to only serve 2 terms in a lifetime, and that's it. You know, let's stop recycling these damn politicians. You know, I'm sick of these people.
Wait a minute. You mean you don't like Scott Kennedy, Mike Rotkin, and Cynthia Matt? What's wrong with you?
No, they suck, you know, to use the vernacular of the common man.
They're simply failing, I mean, following the wise counsel of City Manager for Life, Dick Wilson.
Well, that and the, you know, the Downtown Business Association and whoever else is, like, you know, putting pools in their backyards or whatever else they're doing for them, you know.
Gotcha. Any other commentary on De Anza or anything else?
Well, I just think that these people, you know, it's easy to scare old people, and it's easy to fuck them over. And first they got fucked over by the city, they got fucked over by the company that bought the land there, and now they're getting fucked over by their own board, you know, and it's just, it's unbelievable that, you know, that these people are scared enough that they just don't know which way to turn. That's the way it looks like to me. Is they're, you know, like a deer with its head caught, its eyes caught in the headlights, you know.
Right. You know, I invited former Mayor Christopher Crone to come on the air and talk about this issue. I've not yet gotten a phone call back from him. Rotkin did agree to come on and talk about this. Of course, that's not hard to get Mike to talk about things on the air. He likes to talk, and he speaks very well. I tend to disagree with much of what he says.
Well, Mike is suffering from mild form of Tourette's.
Oh, you cruel man, you.
But on another subject, you know, it's like now that Steve Belcher's leaving.
Chief of police.
Yeah, it's a perfect time for the city council to step in and say, well, we don't want Dick Wilson to appoint the new chief. You still there?
I'm here.
Oh, okay, I'm getting fuzzy noises on me.
Yeah, I'm hearing fuzz, too. Go ahead.
Say, we don't want the city manager to appoint the next chief of police. We're going to give Michael Tomasi a chance to be chief. He keeps on coming up in front of us and saying he wants to be the chief of police, so we're going to let him for a while and see how it works.
Indeed. He can lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance repeatedly and leading the flag. Thank you, Scott.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM is what you're tuned to. 427-3772 is the call-in number if you'd like to comment on anything you've heard. We're talking about the city council sellout of the De Anzas, the senior mobile home park, followed by the De Anzas' response of getting thousands of signatures, and quite a remarkable feat in such a short period of time, 3 weeks, followed by the sellout of their board of directors, refusing to bring in the signatures or actually manipulating a vote, wherein the a narrow majority voted in favor of essentially abandoning the fight and allowing MHC to move in and start destroying people's equity in homes one by one. We have a call. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello.
Yeah, Robert.
Hey there. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I wanted to give praise and accolades to Sterling Frost and Herb Rossman for taking the high road.
By high road, you mean that they've been smoking medical marijuana? Or no, I'm sorry.
To cheap shot. Hold on to the referendum ballots.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was probably one of the more difficult decisions that Mr. Frost and Mr. Rossman and others, Dick DeBrava and whoever else was involved, have ever had to make. But they did, as far as the majority are concerned, and in this case, I believe the majority was correct. They did the right thing, they did the principled thing, they did the high road thing, and they deserve to be praised and supported for their principled action.
And you yourself, of course, are a resident, and so a person who has a serious stake in what goes on there.
Absolutely. No one would not wish that it were the way that it was, but that is not the reality. That was not going to be the reality. To expect the city of Santa Cruz to come to the rescue of 300 people for equity that is not theirs legally is not practical. It's not real. It's not sincere. It wasn't going to happen. Now, I will say this, and this is something that maybe I shouldn't say. I think it's great that they got 8,000 signatures, those that went out and gathered signatures.
8,500, I think it was.
All right. It would have been nice to have all those folks when there was a citywide attempt to get rent control.
Hear, hear.
But it was not in their self-interest at that time, Robert.
I can't disagree with you, Bob.
All right. Once again, I want to give praise and accolades to Mr. Frost, Mr. Rossman, Dick DeBrava for taking the high road. Must have been an extremely difficult decision.
However, I do disagree.
By the way, yeah. At that meeting Tuesday,
yes.
The people that spoke, many of them ranted and screamed and raved
for 3 minutes
about,
each, right?
About turning in the referendum, right?
For 3 minutes
when the vote
each.
When the vote went down, it went down 2-1.
I know. For 3 minutes each. However, the 8 board members gave themselves
unlimited
time.
They have bylaws, Robert. They were adhering to the bylaws. Christopher Crone, who didn't want to aberrate the process in 1999 or 1998, didn't have a right to be inside there.
Oh, I think
you're not being sincere in your regard, Mr. Norris. You're just rabble rousing for the sake of rabble rousing.
No, wait a minute. You have a copy of the bylaws that bars people from the outside from these meetings?
No, I do not.
Then I don't think you're correct.
On that point, I will pass to Mr. Frost. I do not believe that he would pull a fast one in that regard, Robert. I think that's incredibly insincere. What I wanted to call on was to say that I think that Mr. Frost, Mr. Rossman, deserve incredible praise for all the time, all the effort, clearly all the money they put into this, and to take the high road decision that they took deserves a lot of praise.
Okay, well, I appreciate your position there, Bob. I disagree with you on the equity matter, and I think if had an attorney been allowed in there to explain the position, the high road might have gone in exactly the opposite direction, and I think that was a manipulated result by the board. Now, I'm not saying somebody else.
I think that you're using extremely manipulative language.
There, Will Constantine wanted to go to that meeting. He told me he was going to that meeting.
Why should he go to the meeting? It was a vote among the people that were residents here at the park. Each unit had one vote.
Did Will go to the meeting?
Huh?
Was Constantine at the meeting?
Why should he be at the meeting?
Because
Robert,
he was invited to the meeting, because he intended to go and speak at the meeting, because
the people wanted him to
speak.
Christopher Crone should have gone then. Anybody should have gone.
Anybody should have helped. Yes, I agree.
I don't agree with that, Robert. I think that what they did was the right thing.
Okay, well, we disagree.
They played it by the correct rules of principle, and I think they deserve incredible praise.
Okay, well, you've made that point.
A very, very difficult decision to make, Mr.
Right.
Norris.
Particularly when you have to, exclude opposition opinion to do it. Yeah, yeah.
For the courage and the principle that was practiced.
I'm sorry, I just can't. I think you're being naive or blind about this one, Bob. I really do. I can't agree with you. But we disagree, so that's fine. Anything more you want to say on that?
Yeah, I want to say that the people that do the ranting were not in the majority, and that's pretty typical with that kind of politics.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would
the people
prefer...
that were doing the fear tactics and the scare tactics were the ones that were doing the ranting and the screaming and the raving.
You don't think that it's a fear tactic to tell people to abandon the referendum?
It's interesting that the vote went down 2-1.
Wait a minute.
That were silent.
Bob, what fear tactics are you talking about? Let's get clear on this. Sounds to me. When I say fear tactics, I'm talking about the tactic that says unless you give in to MHC now, you're going to be screwed. This fear tactic that presents this little
tactic is that if you're not with us, you're some kind of a Nazi.
Well, that can be another
right?
fear.
And you should be ostracized.
That can be another fear tactic.
So why was it, Robert, that it went down 2-1 and most of the people with very, very rare exceptions spoke rantingly about turning into signatures.
I wasn't in
the
room.
Do you really think that Mr. Frost and Mr. Rossman and Dick DeBrava did not think this through?
They had their opinion, and like leaders on the city council, they held their opinion above that of others and steered people into it by excluding opposition. I understand. You're praising him, but I'm looking at the flyer that was handed out. This is a distorted flyer that does not evenly address the issues. If they put this out, it's bullshit.
Robert, it's like the pot calling the kettle black for you to call something distorted. I'm sorry, Robert, for you to stir up and this issue, the way that you
exactly
do,
what am I distorting?
I think it's good that you provide a voice in one sense.
Bob, what distortion
not,
are you talking about?
It is not a voice that presents the middle of the road, which is the most difficult.
Bob,
because it's the
truth
most ambiguous.
Is the truth. It may be in the middle of the road, it may be on the side of the road, it may be above the road, but the truth is the truth, and that's what I try to put out here.
Right,
I also
right.
try to give other people an opportunity to speak.
Robert,
this flyer is full of bullshit.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM is what you're hearing, the rantings of Robert Norris here on the air, and you can rant too along with me. 427-3772 is the number to call. And I think there's also let me check my email here, rnorris2@hotmail.com is what you can reach me at in case you're trying to reach me, and apparently you're not, but you can do that. I know there are a couple of SCAN has a meeting going on right now if you want to check that out at the Loudon Nelson Center. And the Club Cruise has a show on right now on channel 26 or 27 if you want to check that out. Voices is coming up. But of course, you can always stay tuned and give a call here to 427-3772. That's Free Radio. And, yeah, the issue is, has certainly raised my temperature several degrees. I'm really sad to see this happening, but I kind of, you know, I'm not terribly surprised, because I find that the same kind of power structures tend to replicate themselves, I guess, in smaller groups as do in groups like the city council. And one sees the same kind of closed meetings, skewed agendas, disproportionate time given to one side over the other, phony information given out, absentee ballots not allowed, people excluded who might present an argument that is against the prefabricated agenda of the board of directors or the city council. And I think it's a serious disgrace and shame if that is what happened. And it sounds to me like that's what happened. Now, Sterling Frost and Herb Rossman are welcome to call in. I was supportive of their effort. I do not, it sounds to me like they made their own decisions to kill this thing and then steered it through. And that's what happened. And I disagree with that. I disagree with that very strongly. And that, of course, colors my opinion. But I also feel that the process they used, well, it sounds pretty illegitimate to me. And that is even, that's an even more serious charge. So, call in if you want. 427-3772 is the number here. And while I'm waiting for this flood of calls, let's catch an interview or two from the street for a change of pace.